The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the October issue of Boys Life magazine. We're going to begin on page 18, Put It Out. Wildfire is spreading fast. Hundreds of firefighters and support teams rush in. How do they get organized? Well, fire seasons are getting longer and more intense. It takes huge teams of workers to get wildfires under control. Here's what a firefighting incident command system, ICS, looks like. Well, we have the helicopter crews transport firefighters to and from fire lines, scoop water from lakes or rivers to dump on fires, and deliver much-needed food, water, and supplies to firefighters in remote areas. Helibase sets up as close as possible to the fire. Crews maintain the helicopters. Helibases can have many helicopters at one time of various sizes, depending on the need. Hand crews cut fire lines by removing or burning vegetation down to bare soil. Fires stop at these lines because there's nothing left to burn. Every crew member must be able to carry 45 pounds, 3 miles, in less than 45 minutes. Sleeping area is where some snooze under the stars if they're too tired to set up a tent. Trailers have bunks and air conditioners for day sleeping. Incident commander is in charge, responsible for everything and everyone fighting the fire. Food unit serves hot and cold breakfast and dinner, along with bag lunches. Root beer floats are a favorite. Firefighting requires lots of energy, food. Laundry unit takes in firefighters' dirty clothes and has them cleaned the next day. Shower unit provides returning firefighters with a hard choice. Do you first sleep, eat, or grab a hot shower? Dispatch radio operators monitor and stay in contact with everyone while paying special attention to fire crews calling in for help and supplies. Then we have the smoke jumpers parachute into the most remote fires with enough gear for up to 3 days. They have to be able to carry 110 pounds, 3 miles in less than 90 minutes. Hot shot crews go to more remote and difficult fires, often staying 14 days at a time and working 12 to 16 hours a day. Engine crews drive out to the fire to spray water and create fire lines. Air tanker pilots drop loads of fire retardant to slow or stop fires. They swoop down to around 150 feet off the ground, nearly half a football field, flying at 150 miles per hour. Medical unit, emergency medical technicians and medics treat lots of blisters. Serious injuries and illnesses go straight to a hospital. Operations chief develops the firefighting plan and oversees all of the firefighting efforts. Briefing area is where leaders meet every morning to go over the fire status and present the day's plan and objectives, discuss fire behavior, talk about weather, etc. Then there's ground support unit. Mechanics and crews repair vehicles, handle parking, and do maintenance like changing tires. And then there's security. Greets and checks everyone coming in and going out of base. In 2018, more than 58,000 nationwide wildfires consumed nearly 9 million acres. Welcoming Weeblos. A scout is friendly, especially when around visiting Cub Scouts. When the members of Scouts BSA troops, 26 boys and 126 girls out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, talk with Weeblos Scouts at their Halloween weekend campout, you won't hear them saying things like, "Hey, you in the blue hat." Instead, you'll hear the older scouts treating the Cub Scouts like friends, asking them questions, getting to know more about them, and maybe most important, calling them by their names. "We want to really engage with the era of light scouts," says Haley Whitbrook, a 13-year-old from Troop 126. "We want to make them feel like a member of the troop." Halo Weekend is an annual Halloween-themed event in Ooliga, Oklahoma, where Scouts BSA troops invite Wiblos dens from all over the area to spend the weekend together. The Wiblos get to go camping and learn some Scouts BSA skills and maybe decide which troop they're going to join. The Scouts BSA members get to practice their leadership skills by taking the younger Scouts under their wings for the weekend. In the end, everyone wins and everyone has fun. It's important for the Cub Scouts to see that they can have a connection with the Scouts they're going to be spending time with in Scouts BSA, says Nathan McCorkle, the 14-year-old senior patrol leader of Troop 26 at last fall's Halo Weekend event. Recruiting season. Recruiting is a big part of having a healthy Scout unit, and an event like Halo Weekend can go a long way toward meeting your recruiting goals. It's an opportunity to recruit new Scouts, not by telling them why they should join your troop, but by showing them what it could be like when they join. At Halo Weekend, Scouts BSA members guide Cub Scouts to a variety of events. Some are designed to help them earn Wiblos or Arrow of Light requirements. Others are just for fun. Both are an opportunity for older Scouts to show their new friends why it's worth sticking around for Boy Scouts BSA. It helps them see what being in Scouts BSA is like, says Marin Hetler, 12, from Troop 126. We're trying to get more momentum and get more girls to join, and we can kind of, well, make the difference between if they stay in Scouts or not. At one station, the Scouts BSA members help the Cub Scouts earn their castaway elective adventure, which involves cooking with pots and pans, lighting a fire without matches, and building a shelter out of tree limbs. At another, the older Scouts teach the younger ones how to fly fish. At yet another, they teach them about backpacking. At night, they settle in for skits around a campfire. Being prepared. As with any Scout camp out, the key to a successful recruiting event is planning. Because the event is so ingrained in the culture of Troop 26, everyone takes a tremendous amount of pride in doing their part to pull it off. It gave me some more leadership opportunities, Marin says. Nathan had already been part of two previous recruiting campouts, so he had a good idea of what would work and what wouldn't. We want to show them how our troop functions and what we do, he says. So here on the picture of page 22 at the top, we have Scouts BSA members show off their breakfast cooking skills. And then down at the bottom, the older Scouts lead a refresher course on the outdoor code and leave no trace left before the leading way on a hike along the shores of Ooliga Lake. Moving on to page 23, this means not just camping alongside the Wiblos. It means camping with the Wiblos. It's a way of showing the Cub Scouts that you're with them every step of the way. I enjoyed it, says Haley. They were a little crazy. They were everywhere when we went on our hike, and I was like, you have to stay with me. But I really like seeing all of the smiling faces. The key is to keep them interested. Ask them questions about themselves. Find out where they go to school. Ask what they like most about scouting. Most of the time, Nathan says, they're really interested in what we're doing. Monster Mash. Tulsa, Oklahoma, Troop 26 started its Halo Weekend event in 2010. When girls started joining Scouts BSA, Girls Troop 126 became a part of the team. The event has grown so much that other Scout troops from the area are invited as well. To go along with the Halloween theme, each year features a different monster, which is really one specially chosen Scouts BSA member in a costume. After starting with traditional monsters such as Dracula and Frankenstein, the group has led to reach for lesser-known ones. The most recent was the Creature from the Black Lagoon, a character that debuted in the 1954 movie, but hasn't seen a whole lot of action in Hollywood since. Troop 26 keeps a display of all the monster costumes from past Halloween events. Wiblo Scout John Dix prepares the pumpkin for some creative carving. And then, of course, here at the bottom, page 23, campers settle in for a spooky night at the movies. Page 24, Ghost Blade. Cole loves hockey more than anything, but does he have what it takes to be a champ? His breath came in gasps. His skates dug into the ice as he started back up the rink. It took every bit of strength he had left to hold the hockey stick in his grasp. Dig deep. Go, 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 Coach Fraser's shouts sounded far away in the cavernous arena. His Milford Tanker sweater was drenched in sweat. His legs were dead. He had nothing left until he did. His skates glided across the blue line, and he churned further, cutting behind the net, skating back up the ice. Come on, he gasped. Don't stop now. He cast a quick glance at Coach Fraser, who gave two quick bursts on his whistle to end the drill. He coasted to a stop, wiping sweat from his forehead. He loved hockey. He was the number one ranked player in his age group in the state. At 14, he was already drawing interest from colleges. He dreamed of someday playing in the National Hockey League. But there were days like today when he didn't know if he would ever make it that far. Coach Swanson, the team was undefeated and ranked number 4 in the country. They were favorites to win state, which would give them a shot to make nationals. All of that didn't seem to faze Coach, or please Coach. Every day he kept cold after practice to run extra drills, always talking about how champions stay late, champions dig deep. Cole kept his head down, not wanting to make eye contact with Coach. The closer they got to state, the harder he pushed. Don't get comfortable, Coach said. You're not done yet. I've got a surprise for you. A surprise? Cole said. Like a cake? No cake. Just somebody I want you to meet. He looked at his watch. He should be here by now. I'll go check. Maybe the door is locked. Wait until I get back. Cole skated in a slow circle and swept up a puck that was lying at center ice. He darted toward the goal, stick handling. With a flick, he fired the puck into the goal. It felt good. He turned around and was startled to find a man standing near the opposite net, wearing battered old-fashioned skates and an old Milford Tankle sweater. Ah, Cole jerked, nearly falling to the ice. Sorry, the old man said. Didn't mean to startle you. His voice was deep and gravelly. His thick white hair was swept straight back. His skin was lined with old scars. He must have played in the day before helmets were required. He'd certainly taken a few pucks and sticks to the face. How you doing, kid? He said. He skated to the center ice. Okay. Are you the surprise? Cole asked. He was struck by how familiar this man looked. He was certain he'd seen him before, but, well, he couldn't say where. Maybe in the bleachers, watching games. You ready for state? The man asked, getting to a stop near Cole. Am I, yeah, I think so. You don't seem so convinced, he said. I am, just, you know, the puck bounces funny sometimes. Sure, I've seen it many times, the old man swiped the air with his stick, testing its weight. He tipped a puck onto the blade of his stick, bouncing it up and down before dropping it to the ice. He fired a slap shot toward the goal. It bounced off the back of the net. It happened so fast, Cole almost didn't believe it. Nice shot, Cole said.
Thanks. I used to play a little.
Cool. I should probably get back to work. Before Coach picks back, he said. The old man looked at him.
Drives you pretty hard, doesn't he?
He drives me somewhere. The old man laughed.
Well, that's what coaches do. Even great players need someone to push them. Someday you'll take the ice against somebody better than you physically. You can't let them be better than you mentally. Your coach is pushing you to be great. It's not personal.
Really? Is that simple? Cole tried to keep the snark from his voice. He found a lot of people had ideas on what it took to win. Most were full of it. Sure is. I wish my coaches had pushed me a little harder.
It's the difference between winning and losing sometimes.
The man smiled, bouncing two pucks on his blade. He shot both pucks at once. They hit the back of the net like they flew on a rope. That was impressive, Cole said.
The old man shrugged. Like I said, I used to play a little. Won a couple of championships in my younger days.
Which championships? The man didn't answer. Instead, he shot the 5 remaining practice pucks. Each shot flew straight and true into the back of the net. What's your name? Cole asked. Still no answer. Instead, he gazed up at the rafters and the banners hanging there. The Milford Tankers were a junior hockey dynasty, and they had the lodge up there to show for it. "There's nothing like seeing one of those raised up there," he said. His eyes had a wistful look.
"Are you ready for yours to go up?"
"I am," Cole said.
"Remember, your coach is trying to get you to realize how good you are. You play other good teams, even better teams. At some point, you won't be the best player on the ice anymore. I think you probably already know that. Doesn't mean you're going to lose, though. I knew guys in our league who had more talent. They never won anything because they didn't want it bad enough."
Cole nodded. "I want it." Where had he seen this man before? He sort of liked the old guy. "Will you teach me how to do that double shot?" Cole asked.
"Huh? I need to get going," he stammered.
"Just 5 minutes, that's all I asked." Cole turned and skated to the net and scooped out the pucks. As he turned to shoot them back to the center ice, the man was gone.
"Mister, hello?"
He looked all around. Gone. "Well, that's weird."
"What's weird?"
It was Coach Fraser walking out on the ice.
"Who was that guy?"
"What guy?"
Coach asked.
"The guy you wanted me to meet."
Coach Fraser raised his phone in his hand. "Didn't make it. Got stuck at work. His name is Reggie Dunlap. Used to play minor league hockey. I thought he might give you some pointers."
"How old is he?"
"How old?
He's in his 40s, I guess. Why?"
"Nothing. Did you see anyone else in here?"
"What?
No.
Are you okay?"
Yeah, I guess."
"Hit the showers. We need to get home and fix dinner for your mom."
"Okay, Dad. I mean, Coach."
Cole had slipped. Coach Fraser was also his dad. He tried to refer to him only as Coach at the rink. Cole thought about what the old man said. Maybe his dad just wanted him to be his best. His dad was waiting in the lobby when Cole emerged from the locker room a few minutes later. The walls were lined with photos of hockey teams and players who'd skated at the rink before through the years. Some had gone on to play in college, a few in the NHL. Then it hit him. He turned back down the hallway, scanning each photo. There he was, the same guy. Much younger in the photo, but definitely him.
"Tank Milford," he whispered.
"It can't be."
He felt dizzy.
The gold plaque under the photo read, "Tank Milford, founder of the Milford Tankers Hockey Club, born 1925, Vancouver, Canada, died 2015, Detroit, Michigan."
"Dad, you're not going to believe this."
"Believe what?" he said.
"Hurry up, kid. We need to get going.
He looked at the picture. No, it couldn't be.
Might as well not say anything or believe him.
"What's the matter? You look like you've seen a ghost,"
his dad said.
"He loved the game," he said.
"What? Who loved the game?
Are you okay? You're acting strange."
Cole looked through the doors leading to the rink, to the patch of glowing white ice. For a moment he thought he saw someone skating over the center line, but no, there was nothing there.
Yeah, I'm good," he said as they pushed their way through the outside doors. It was a brisk night. Snow swirled through the sky.
"Dad, I love hockey," he said.
"I know," his father said, smiling.
"Let's go home."
Let's look at earthquakes. Page 28. Earthquakes happened when underground plates move suddenly, sending a shock wave above ground. They usually last less than 1 minute, but they can do a lot of damage. And share on pages 28 and 29 the damage of some earthquakes, buildings toppling over. Most of the world's earthquakes happen in the Ring of Fire, which is a path of volcanoes and tectonic plates along the Pacific Ocean. About 500,000 earthquakes happen every year. That's one every minute. The Richter scale is used to compare the strength of earthquakes. Richter scale, possible damage. 6, walls and windows likely to crack. 7, streets and bridges likely to crack. 8, buildings and bridges likely to collapse. 9 and up, entire cities likely to be ruined. There are often small earthquakes before and after larger ones. These are called foreshocks and aftershocks.
Learn more about earthquakes at go.boyslife.org.usgs. Next month, let's look at dinosaurs. Cool carving. Be prepared to create the best jack-o'-lantern this Halloween season. With the right tools and a little imagination, you can turn a simple pumpkin into a scary or silly jack-o'-lantern. One option is to use some of the kitchen tools you probably already have in your house. You need a serrated knife, a vegetable peeler, and spoons for scooping. Another is to buy a kit that includes special saws and other tools designed for safe carving. You can find an inexpensive one online or at your local hobby shop. Once you have the right tools, the real fun begins. Grab a trusted adult and get to work. Number one, choose the right pumpkin. It should be firm and fresh, but when it comes to shape, the possibilities are endless. A tall, skinny pumpkin works just as great as a short, wide one. Number two, cut off the top and remove the insides. Draw a circle around the top of the pumpkin so you know where to cut, and then remove the top. Scoop out the stingy inside with a spoon or scooping tool. The thinner the walls of the pumpkin are, the easier it will be to carve. Number three, draw your design on a piece of paper. Cut it out and then trace it on your pumpkin. Punch through your paper with a sharp pencil if you have to. Then go over your tracing with a marker to make sure it's clear where you're supposed to cut. The most important thing is to match your design to the pumpkin shape. A long pumpkin, it could get a long face with a droopy nose. A round pumpkin could be a good match for a short face with a round nose. Get creative. 4. Saw and cut along the lines until complete. Take your time. Go slowly. If you mess up, don't worry. That's a chance to get even more creative. Number 5. Ta-da! Your pumpkin is ready for display. The slow decay. Grab a trusted adult and wet the pumpkin's inside with a solution of water and tiny bit of bleach. Then seal the whole thing in a plastic bag and refrigerate it until it's ready to be displayed. A note on knives. Cub Scouts rules say bears can start using knives after completing the whittling chip requirements. No matter how old you are, don't use any of these tools or start carving on your own without permission from a trusted adult. GoBoysLife.org/Whittling. For more pumpkin carving tips, including some templates, visit GoBoysLife.org/pumpkins. A true story of Scouts in Action, page 46. Anthony A.J. McDonald, 16, and Justin Zavodsky, 17, were driving with a friend when they came upon a major accident. An SUV was on fire with a woman trapped inside, and no other drivers were stopping to help. As the vehicle filled with smoke, the woman inside began screaming. Justin and AJ tried to free the woman, but the vehicle's doors wouldn't open. As an onlooker used the fire extinguisher to control the flames, AJ ran to get a hammer from his vehicle. The boys smashed the SUV's window to release the smoke and free the woman. A nurse stopped to administer first aid until paramedics arrived. The woman was airlifted to a hospital where she was treated and later released. Star Scout Anthony James McDonald and Eagle Scout Justin Gage Zavodsky, both members of Troop 377, chartered to American Legion Post 168 in Knoxville, Iowa, each received an honor medal for his actions. More Scouts in Action. More True Stories of Scouts in Action, page 47. He saved a man from icy water. Robert Balk, 12, and other scouts were volunteering at a community event on a frozen lake in Schenectady, New York, when one of the organizers suffered a seizure and fell into a hole in the ice. As the man lay motionless, face down in the freezing water, Robert jumped in and lifted his head so he could breathe. Robert's brother and other bystanders then pulled the man out of the water. Robert's father alerted first responders to the accident as they arrived. Robert's siblings cleared away barricades to allow firemen and the ambulance to move the victim to a hospital. The victim was treated and later released. First Class Scout Robert Harold Balk, a member of Troop 61 chartered to Scandinatalese Rotary Club in Scandinatalese, New York, received a heroism award for his actions. And finally, he saved his neighbor from a fire. Wilderette, 16, was in his Pottsboro, Texas home when he heard an explosion. He looked outside and saw that his neighbor's garage was on fire. As Will's mom called 911, Will ran to his neighbor's house to help. A propane tank had exploded and his neighbor's face and hands were severely burned. Will helped extinguish flames on the man's clothing. Will's neighbor tried to use a fire extinguisher, but the device wouldn't work. Will pulled his neighbor out of the garage and took him to a house nearby. Will helped the man call his son before an ambulance arrived. Life Scout William Durrett, Jr., a member of Troop 55, chartered to North Texas Regional Airport in Denison, Texas, received an honor medal for his actions. And one thinking grin, Jefferson, how do you get a man talking on his phone to fall off a jet ski? Aaron, I'm stumped. Jefferson, wave. Here's another. What do you call two witches sharing an apartment? Jen, I have no clue. Luke, broommates. And that's from Luke B. in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Brenda, where does Count Dracula usually eat his lunch? Bianca, where? Brenda, at the cascateria. That's from Benda D. in Elmira, New York. And finally, Nathaniel, what is a tornado's favorite sport? Jesse, I don't know. Nathaniel, football, because of all the touchdowns. And that's from Daniel C. in Manhattan, Kansas. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you again for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.
The purpose of the North Carolina Reading Service is to connect people who are blind and print impaired with each other, their families, and the community by delivering news, information, and entertainment using the latest audio technology. For more information about the North Carolina Reading Service, visit us online at ncreadingservice.org. You can also give us a call. Our telephone number is 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. The North Carolina Reading Service. We breathe words into your life.